Now, we're turning to a series starting this week on News Talk, looking at the issue of direct provision.
We don't come here to make money or to send the money back in the back home, but we don't have something you have as guys here, like democratic freedom.
As a teacher, I had my life threatened. They were saying things and then a whole group would laugh and I didn't know what they were actually saying. And they were making fun and laughing how they were going to rape me and then kill me.
To get an influx all of a sudden of the amount of people will cause great depredation to the area.
The idea that they're putting this 4 to 5 people in a room up here in what is almost like a concentration camp with no facilities for them. I mean, it's inhumane and we don't want to be associated with it as a town.
Living in a room with family of 6 is not easy. My wife and myself with 4 kids. The children sometimes they will say, "Daddy, why? Let's go back. We have our own living room, we have this." I just laugh.
I never really thought this would hit me so hard. I'm having a shorter memory now. I wake up throughout the night, you know. It starts to, you know, get its toll on you, like emotionally and psychologically.
Now, some audio there from this series called The Reality of Direct Provision. It kicks off tomorrow morning here on News Talk and it's going to be running on different programmes throughout the week. To tell us a little bit more about it this morning, I'm joined in studio by News Talk reporter Barry White. Barry, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Some really impactful audio there, but let's start with a little bit of background, I guess. Direct provision, as we know, is 20 years old this year and definitely something that there has been an increased scrutiny on, I guess, over the past couple of months.
I suppose, yeah, with the protests, it's more and more in the media. And as we're going as far back to last year, I've been to Mayville, where was maybe the first proposed direct provision centre was going to be going. There was protests there, a lack of consultation. There ended up being a fire at a hotel there. That was postponed. Bruski again was similar. There was going to be 90 people moving to an area where maybe only had a population of about 400. Again, that resulted in protests. There was a fire there at that hotel. And then we've had protests in places like Ballinamore, Uachtarard, Achill Island. I suppose back last year as well, there was protests in Wicklow Town. So these protests and these arson attacks have really brought direct provision to the fore. But as part of this series, I suppose we want to find out why were there these protests? What's the real reasons? Is it a lack of consultation? Is there something more sinister to this? And I've also been going around direct provision centres around the country to as many as I can possibly get into to hear the voices of people. And I have spoke to people from Nigeria, I've spoke to people from Syria, Albania, South Africa, just various different countries. But the one thing that has struck me about this is their stories and how they ended up here. And every person has a backstory. Every person has had to flee because their life was in danger. And they've had to leave family members behind. And some of the people I spoke to have not had contact with their family for maybe over a year. So that's what kind of really hit me here, was hearing those real voices and those real stories.
Yeah, because I suppose over the last couple of weeks and months, we've heard lots of voices from the protesters. We've heard from people opposing the centres. We've also heard from stories that have worked out quite well, where a centre has worked and where people who are in direct provision have incorporated into the local community. But I guess we don't really hear from the people themselves that often. We just hear from the whole sort of body around it. Did you find it difficult to get into the direct provision centres?
Certain centres I get into quite easily. You contact the departments and they get back to me. Regarding Mosny, I was taken on a tour of Mosny. That was pretty easy to get into. Listenvarna, I went through the department, contacted the hotel owner there. The managing director of the hotel in Listenvarna happened to be from Donegal, so I managed to get in there quite easily. Wicklow Town, I've managed to develop a relationship with the owner there. Again, easy access, very accommodating. But there was other places where the department didn't really get back to me. Ballyhonus in County Mayo, I had to keep at them to get there, but I did get access there eventually. But there's other places that groups like Maasai, the Moving for Asylum Seekers Ireland, like Foynes and Limerick, Maasai would say that's one of the worst places, one of the worst direct provision centres. I couldn't get access there. But the department, to be fair, did say to me, they admitted that that would be one of the worst places. And they're actually looking to close that down. But nevertheless, I did not get access to there.
And then in terms of speaking to the people in direct provision, was it difficult to get them to come forward and share some of those stories with you about where they'd come from and some of the experiences, I guess, that they'd had?
Yeah, look, a lot of asylum seekers don't want to speak, but a lot of them did come forward and they did speak to me. They told me their backstories. A lot of them do have issues. You know, maybe the room is too small. Maybe they have issues about food. But most of the people I spoke to told me that management of these centres do generally work with them. And I didn't hear as much complaints about direct provision as I expected. Most of these people I spoke to said that they're here for protection and they're just glad to be safe. And they're also, I suppose, some of the people I spoke to were quite thankful to the government because they know that they're in a situation that they might not get in other countries. So I kind of found that surprising because I was going in there with the preconception that direct provision is really bad and the conditions are really bad. But I kind of found from the places I visited that it's not maybe as bad as some groups would lead you to believe.
That was obviously something you wanted to explore because I guess as the whole opposition to direct provision centres, as that story has progressed, we've heard an awful lot about people who feel they are going to oppose a direct provision centre because they feel it's an inhumane way of dealing with asylum seekers. Now, we've also heard from organisations who say, you know, they never complained about it or they didn't campaign against direct provision until it arrived in their neighbourhood as such. But I guess the whole idea of whether it's humane or not was something that you wanted to explore with the series.
Yeah, like as I say, I've been to Gerard, I spoke to protesters there. They say that the reason they were protesting is because of the inhumane conditions. I never went to Uachtaráin and said to these people, oh, you're racist. I wanted to hear their voices and their reasons, and that they had many reasons. Lack of consultation, too many people coming to their area, you know, where the hotel was, there was no footpath, there was no lights. They did give various reasons. But at the same time, I'm not sure if I believe that excuse that they're giving, that it's because direct provision is inhumane, because how many of these people have actually been to a direct provision centre? So it's hard to know, but I think one of the main reasons for the protest is basically just a lack of consultation. And the department do hold their hands up and say that there probably has been a lack of consultation.
Yeah, and that's said all the time. But, you know, I suppose the other side of that is people think that, well, look, if we did consult with these people, they still wouldn't want it. That sometimes that's a very easy excuse to use at the same time, saying, look, you know, lack of communication. Nobody told us anything. We weren't consulted. But does that mean that if you were consulted that you would have gone along with it, you know?
Yeah, I suppose from speaking to Minister David Stanton, he said he would wish that people would go along with it and work with them because, look, I've been to Listenvarna and 18 months ago there was protests in Listenvarna. They had a public meeting. 95% of that meeting voted against the centre coming to the town. But 18 months on, after visiting there, the asylum seekers are there in the hotel. Anybody I stopped in Listenvarna said you wouldn't notice these people are here. But the business people said that they're glad these people are here. Hotels, restaurants, bars in Listenvarna are seasonal work and local people don't want to do that seasonal work, whereas the asylum seekers who have got their work permit are jumping at that chance. So it's gone from a place of protest and it's gone full circle to being very, very positive.
Wicklow is another success story like that. You've been back there as well.
Yeah, I've been back there a few times. It was the first time I went to Wicklow town. I went to a public meeting. And some of the voices I heard there was, you know, there was real. There was people saying, oh, if my son walks past that hotel and there's asylum seekers there after a night out, he might get robbed or stabbed. That was the kind of stuff people were saying back last year. But now the asylum seekers are in the hotel. You know, they're working for, they're volunteering for local groups like Tidy Towns.
Tidy Towns, yeah.
And, you know, even when I was in the hotel yesterday, you have the notice board, so it's like running clubs, choirs, just stuff that they're volunteering for, and that helps there. But again, the local people are now saying you wouldn't notice they're there. So it's the protest to begin with, but then once these people are here, it's actually nowhere near as bad as they thought it might be. So that fear just actually disappears.
So you've been right around the place. As you say, you've spoken to people with lots of different stories and we heard a little teaser of them there. So this kicks off tomorrow and I guess we'll hear a lot more of it through different programmes throughout the week.
Yeah, we're going to have different guests throughout the week. We'll hear, I suppose, the voices from direct provision, but we're going to be looking at many topics. Is direct provision inhumane? Do children in emergency accommodation have access to education? We're going to be looking at places like Listenvarna. You know, why have they accepted these people and almost welcomed them? while places like Uachtaráid, Achill Island and Ballinamore are against it. So we'll kind of be exploring that as well. But there's going to be many different topics relating to direct provision we'll be exploring this week.
The reality of direct provision kicking off on News Talk Breakfast tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. and you will hear other bits and pieces and Barry across the schedule throughout the week. But Barry White, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks.